I want to welcome everyone to our Keeping on Track Open Line 2011 and Beyond with futurist David Hull, author of The Shift Age. My name is Dana Barocca. I'm the CEO of Lighthouse Consulting Services, and we'll be hosting our program today. We have a few housekeeping items, and we'll jump right into our program. For those of you joining us for the first time, at Lighthouse, everything we do goes back to our mission statement, to help keep organizations off the rocks of potential self-destruction. We do this through our in-depth work style and personality assessments and raising the hiring bar, and we assist sales and operations to avoid getting stuck in shallow waters so they have smooth sailing. We also offer a number of workshop topics to associations and trade organizations, and if you'd like more information, please email me as indicated on your screen. Our Keeping on Track Open Line series is in response to a number of calls we've been getting from many of our clients, both domestically and globally, to address the various business issues that most organizations are facing today. Our goal is to make this an interactive program, so on your screen you'll see an area you can send questions or ideas during our discussion, and we'll attempt to respond to as many of you as possible. So please join us with your thoughts and insights along the way. At the conclusion of our program, we're going to open up the line so you can talk directly to our guests. You'll also want to have some paper and a pen handy to take notes, since we'll be sharing many ideas that you want to consider and implement with your team and trusted advisors. Our special guest with us today is David Hull. He is a globally recognized business futurist, advisor, and speaker. David is constantly ranked as one of the top futurists and futurist keynote speakers on major search engines. He is often called the CEO's futurist, having spoken and advised over 1,400 CEOs and business owners in the past 3 years alone. His first book, The Shift Age, was published in 2008 and has soared off the charts. And his next book, which I can't wait to get, Shift Ed, A Call to Action for Transforming K-12. And that will be published in the spring of 2011. I'm personally very excited and grateful to have David with us today and to share ideas which will help each of us in today's business environment. Also, registration at the end of our program will begin at the end of our topic today, and that will be tips for staying ahead of the recovery. One other thing before I hand this over to David, you'll notice next to David's name, you'll see author of The Shift Age, and it says promotional code LHLHouseYZ. David's been gracious enough, and he'll explain later, that he has a special program called Shift Trends. And if you use that code to get the Shift Trends, you'll get a $100 discount, which is very gracious of David, and I appreciate that him sharing that with our audience. Because normally it's a $275 report, and it's only $175, and it's absolutely amazing. You'll enjoy it and get a lot out of it. David, I want to welcome you. I'm going to work the slides. We're having a slight technical issue, so I'm going to. David, if you have any words, and then just tell me to go to the first slide whenever you want me to.
Okay, so basically, thank you for that nice introduction, and depending on where you are in the world, good morning, good afternoon, good evening. We do have a little bit of a technical glitch, at least at my end, where I can't see the slides that you probably all can see. So I'm working off my own deck here. So what I guess I'll do, Dana, is that I'll just say, next point. Is that the way we should work
it? That's perfect.
Okay, so let's bring up that first slide, trends and forecast for 2011. What I want to do here, everyone, is to give you, obviously, some forecasts for the new year and perhaps into next year. But before I do, I want to take maybe the first third of this presentation to give you a high-level view, because as I say to audiences all around the world, first of all, as a futurist, I define what I do as to be a catalyst to get people, the market, and the world to think about the future, and then to facilitate a conversation about it. So the one way to do that is to lift you up out of your existing context. You're all sitting in offices or at homes around the world thinking about today's business and your next deal, and I want to lift you up out of that and take you on a quick tour of the future and where we are, and then drill down into the forecast. So So if we could go to that next slide, Dana. We're in an inflection point in history. We can put up all three of those points, Dana. We're in a new century. We're in a new age, the shift age. And we've entered a new decade, one that I have called the transformation decade. And I will talk about all three of these points, but this is one of those rare moments where the world changes. It's one of those 50-year periods where beginning and the end are entirely different. People who were know the workplace in 1975, if they could look ahead to 2025, they would not recognize it. Just think about how much change has occurred between 1975 and today. So the amount of the change of that 35 years will be about the same amount of change as the next 15. That's why it's an inflection point in history. So we've obviously entered a new century. We've obviously we've entered a new age that I call a shift age, name of my book, and it's what I'm known for that we'll talk about. And we've entered a decade, the transformation decade, and the latter part of this presentation we'll talk about the transformation decade and what you need to do as business managers and business leaders to not only survive but thrive. So on to the next slide, the four ages of man. Before we put up any points there, everybody on this phone call today represents the latest iteration of humanity, what anthropologists call modern man. And modern man has been around for 150,000 years. And to that first point, the agricultural age began 10,000 years ago when modern man literally put down roots. And if you can remember your years of higher ed, every single great civilization you could ever recall or think about occurred in this 10,000-year period, so that is, in fact, recorded history. And then the industrial age, next point, started 300 years ago with the introduction of the steam engine into the marketplace, which brought about all the wonders of the industrial age. And then most recently, the information age, 30 years ago, arbitrarily 1975. And the interesting thing is that I have said on that last point, the shift age, arbitrarily I say it's begun in 2006, and I'll explain that shortly. But the first thing I want you to notice is the acceleration with which new ages get introduced. That's the acceleration of the rate of change. And for those of you not familiar with thinking of history this way, when a new age begins, it doesn't mean an old age ends. Yeah, I'm sitting here in Florida, and within 10 miles of where I am, somebody's growing something, somebody's manufacturing something in a factory, somebody's sitting in a wired office. But the interesting thing, and I'm a baby boomer, so for you baby boomers out there, we are part of the first generation in human history that has been touched by three ages. The information age began in the mid-70s. That means I was born in the industrial age. I spent a lot of my adult life matriculating the information age, and now I've entered the shift age. So what I'd like to do is then move on to the next slide and explain why what we've been living through these 4 years has been so disruptive. Times of transition are disruptive. And to that first point, the current recession is a reorganizational recession. Now, what I mean by that is it is a recession that where all the economies of the world, and particularly those in the United States and the developed countries of the world, are being reorganized. That is why economists keep getting their predictions wrong. I'm not an economist. I'm not a financial advisor. I'm a macro thinker. And over the last 3 years, for CEOs, I've been consistently right in my forecast because I see it from this point of view. So everything is getting reorganized economically, and therefore, 3 years ago, I coined the phrase, thrift would be the new cool, thrift would be the new extravagance. That, in fact, has happened. I said the consumer has been scarred because everything the consumer believed in, you know, now is put in doubt. And it's a reorganizational recession. And it is most like, if you put up the next point, Dana, the 1970s. For those of you old enough on this conference webinar to remember the 70s. You can remember how disruptive it was. In the United States, New York City was going to go bankrupt. Our jobs were being shipped overseas to Japan. We had 10% unemployment. We had 15% interest rates, 15% inflation sound familiar? Well, in hindsight, it's pretty clear what the 1970s were, because in the 1960s, the United States was an industrial age country, as were the countries in Western Europe. And then in the 1980s, all those countries became entered the information age. PCs, cable TV, cell phones, communication satellites. So what the 70s were was a disruptive transition lasting about a decade between these two ages. So to the next point, I strongly have been saying to CEOs and audiences around the world that 2006 and 2011 is a similar time. The acceleration of the rate of change has collapsed it, so we don't have to suffer through this for 10 years. The good news right there on that line is that 2011 is the end date. I will talk about that in my forecast in the second part of this webinar. But we have seen the worst in the developed countries of the world of this global reorganizational recession. Now, to the last point on the slide, if you can bring it up, we have all been told, certainly in the United States, that this economic downturn that we've just gone through is the worst economic downturn since the Great Depression. That, in fact, is true. In my analysis of all the post-World War II recessions, there are only two recessions that at all correlate in terms of the dynamics of a recession to this one, and that's the 73 to 75 and the 80 to 82. And when did those occur? They occurred exactly in the structural reorganization in the developed countries of the world between the industrial age and the information age. So hopefully that's a context. I know when I've spoken to CEOs over the last 3 years, they've said this is the first contextual way they've been able to understand this kind of disruptive, unpleasant, often dangerous feeling economic situation. So that's really what it is. So if we could move to the next slide, Dana, and again, I apologize to everybody that somehow the futurist here is having the technical glitches. There are three fundamental forces of the shift gauge. To bring up the first one. The first is the flow to global. What I mean by that is that we, humanity, are getting organized around a new global concept. Sure, it's the global economy, but we're getting organized around all of us. We're getting organized around the macro. There is no bigger economic or social unit than all of us. We have, in fact, entered the global stage of human evolution. Everybody on this call, to some degree, thinks of themselves as a global citizen. That is not something any of us on this call thought of ourselves as 15 years ago. So we're getting organized around the flow to the global. So the next point, the flow to the individual. Today, individuals are more powerful than they've ever been in human history. We have, because of the explosion of choice that has occurred worldwide in the last 30 years, the power has moved to the individual, to the consumer. It's moved from the producer to the consumer, from the institution to the individual. So we're getting organized around each of us, or the micro. So simultaneously, we're getting organized around all of us, and then each of us. And the, one of the interesting things that that has done is it's created a decline in the value of institutions, at least as we use them for self-identification. So, for example, my parents' generation, the great generation, always introduced themselves by who they worked for, lifelong employment, and what they belonged to. And, you know, so my father, for example, said, oh, I'm a professor at the University of Chicago, and I belong to the Quadrangle Club. Or, I'm a union guy, or I belong to the Shady Oaks Country Club, because that institution reflected something onto the individual. We no longer do that. We say to somebody, so what do you do and what are your interests, not what do you belong to. So we're getting organized around all of us, the flow to global, each of us, the flow to the individual, and to the third point on that slide, the accelerated electronic connectedness of the planet. That force, of course, amplifies the first two, because we're getting globally connected. And because we are globally connected, we're more powerful as individuals because we can access the world from wherever we are. But that accelerated electronic connectedness has created an alternative reality. And what I mean by that is that we now live in a broadband world. So everybody on this phone conference call here has the physical reality that they grew up in which our parents live most of their lives in, and the screen reality. And depending on what you do for a living or how young you are, that screen reality can be as compelling as the physical reality. So now we have two realities for the first time in history. Let me give you another statistic. When I wrote my book in 2007, the wisdom was that we, humanity, would get to 3 billion cell phone subscribers by the middle of 2010. And the reasoning was that it took 20 years to go from the first cell phone subscriber to the billionth. Then it took 4 years to go from the first 1 billion to 2 billion. So we as humans did what we always do, which is to take the current rapid rate of change and project it linearly into the future. Well, that didn't work, because by the end of the first quarter of 2008, we crossed 3 billion cell phone subscribers. Right now, we sit at 5 billion cell phone subscriptions in the world, which means about 4.6 billion users, because many of us have multiple cell phone subscriptions. What that means is that if I was calling somebody who was standing 15 feet away from me, my cell phone to their cell phone, it might take, 1 1,000, 2 1,000, 3 1,000, 4 1,000, 5 seconds, and their phone would ring. If I had the right calling plan and I was calling somebody in India or China from where I sit right now in Florida, it might take another 4 seconds because of the relays and the satellites. So what 5 billion cell phone subscribers means is that the difference between 15 feet and 12,000 miles is 4 seconds. So for the first time in human history, it can be said there's no time or distance limiting human communication. That's a profound fact in an existing reality that did not exist even 5 years ago. And, of course, if you call somebody on their cell phone after, hey, how you doing, can you hear me? One of the first things you say is, so where are you or where you at? Which brings up the third point. There is no time, distance, or place any longer limiting human communication. That is a profound environment in which we all live. And so place is no longer relevant for human communication. If we go to the next slide, on the first point, under the shift age, people always talk to me about the speed of change and how fast it is and how do they deal with it. And I'm here to tell you the reality, which is the speed of change is in constant acceleration, and it is now environmental. You can no longer think of change as one of those dynamics in your life that you have to measure and deal with. You have to rethink change as being environmental. We all live in an environment of change. Hence, that's part of the reason I call it the shift age. Everything in your life, everything in the lives of everybody listening to my voice right now, is in a state of shift. Some more noticeable than others, like the rapid shift and change in technology and the way we use it. Something might be slower, like the way we consider work or how we define who we are, how we parent, or how we communicate. But everything is in a relative state of shift. It's now environmental. The next point, again to reiterate, we are in the global stage of human evolution. We have gone from family to tribe to village to city state to nation state, and our only remaining boundary, at least for now, is planetary. So we have irrevocably, undeniably, without hesitation, enters the global stage of human evolution. The next point, global economy. Economics happens first. Now, I doubt that there's anybody in this webinar right now that would question the reality of the global economy. We all know that we're in a global economy. That's part of the disruptive forces that we've had to live with. But what history tells us is that economics happens. Genghis Khan, Alexander the Great, all those great conquerors of ancient age conquered other countries to get the riches of the land and to enslave the population for economic gain. You know, for the glory of Rome, we conquer you. In the United States, we have this very weird perception of Christopher Columbus as the guy who discovered America. He didn't discover America. He sailed west to find a trade route to India. It was an economic impetus for that journey of those three ships. He stumbled upon the landmass that is now the United States of America. We created this great country. So to the last point on that slide, culture and politics will follow. So if you accept that we're in a global economy, and I think we all will, then you have to accept that global culture and politics will follow. Think about the movie that won the best movie of the year award in 2009 out of Hollywood, Slumdog Millionaire. That was the best movie. 10 years ago, it would have been kind of ghettoed into foreign film land. Or think about going to YouTube and you see videos from all around the world on the same page. Politics we've already seen, and it's going to be global politics for issues. When we had the financial meltdown in the fall of 2008, we empowered the IMF and the World Bank. We lowered interest rates collaboratively in the same day. So we're going to be moving to global politics as well. So to the next slide, I want you to understand this word. Globalization is no longer just an economic term, but a force across all aspects of human society. It's no longer economic. So the whole concept of globalization is now a force that's going to course through all of society and change it to a more globally oriented construct. And that's very significant. So to summarize to this point, we are living in an environment of change. There's no time, distance, or place limiting human communication. And globalization is no longer an economic term. So what I'd like to do is to go to the next slide, 2010 to 2020, the transformation decade. Now, before we pull the points up on that, basically the decade begins with year one. So 2011 is technically the first year of the second decade of the 21st century, excuse me. But most of us are certainly Americans, a real odometer-oriented. So whenever more than one digit turns over, it's a big deal, like we can all remember 1999 to 2000, oh, where are you going to be on New Year's Eve and all that, when in truth, the new millennium started in New Year's Eve 2000 to 2001. So at the end of 2009, with all this odometer-oriented, what's the next decade going to be, I threw in the towel, and I wrote a column on 010110, January 1st of last year, and I named this decade the transformation decade. And it lit up in the blogosphere around the world and Twitter. So to go to the first point, this is the first full decade of the shift age. So we are fully entered, certainly now this year, the transformation decade. So to the next point, what is the definition of transformation? If you look it up in the dictionary, the definition is a change in nature, shape, form, or character. So one thing you need to know about this decade is that pretty much everything in the world is going to change its nature, shape, character, or form. So what I say to CEOs and senior managers and C-level executives is, if you want to stay current with the world around you, you have to be in an ongoing state of transformation with your company. You have to be constantly thinking about changing the nature, shape, form, and character. And you have to do that. Transformation is the only, by this definition, management theory that will really work in the long term. Going from good to great, searching for excellence, reengineering the corporation, were all wonderful management theories for 20th century businesses. And if you've read those books, you know that they all focus on 20th century businesses. Well, this is the 21st century. And so you really need to only accept transformation. So what I want to do is take a quick look into this decade. Now, before we put up any points, Dana, just one other thing on this new slide, 2010 to 2020 transformation decade. This is going to be the first decade where humanity creates the 21st century. In other words, we've kind of powered into this century with legacy thinking from the 20th century. You know, the Democratic Party and the Republican Party are full of legacy thought from the 20th century. It's why there's kind of a gridlock. The old ways of doing things from the 20th century don't seem to be working in the 21st century. And I ask everybody on this webinar to just react to the phrase 20th century, the 20th century. Well, whatever you think it is, it's century of science, the century of the United States of America, the century of world wars. It began with World War I, because before World War I, it was a victorian England, the bucolic isolationist basically agricultural country called the United States, the 400 families of the social register in New York. And it wasn't until World War I that the 21st century really unfolded. That's why this is such a significant decade. It's going to be the decade where humanity starts to face forward and creates and thinks about this new century and this new millennium. So to the first point, again, to reiterate, humanity and most of its institutions will be transformed. To the next point, that means there's going to be accelerating change. Sorry, folks, it's not going to slow down. And disruptive innovation. So there's going to be entire businesses that are going to get disrupted because of an innovation occurs. Napster disrupted the music industry, then Apple, Jobs, and the iPod took advantage of it and created iTunes. Things like that are going to happen with increasing frequency. So the next point, again to reiterate, we're going to have a global orientation in connectivity. If there's no time or distance place limiting communication, then there won't be. And it'll be routine that you have a daily conversation with somebody in China. Some of you already do, or those of you in China will be speaking to India or the United States. So we're all going to get that, and it's connectivity. The next point is a high-level concept, but it's very significant. Work and place have separated. In the agricultural age, you had to be in the field. In the industrial age, you had to be in the factory. In the information age, you had to be in the wired office. Now you can work from anywhere. I can work from any hotel in the world as long as I have connectivity. So work and place have separated, which means that the only reason you need to come to a place of work is to collaborate and interact with another human. The workplace and the education place are completely about experience and collaboration, which is why offices are getting completely redefined. We do away with the cubicle, open up interactive space. 15 years ago, if I was in a consulting firm in downtown Chicago where I lived, there might be 100 people there, partners and associates, and there'd be 100 offices in the boardroom. Now there might be 30 offices, because multiple use, the boardroom, and 4 to 8 collaboration spaces with a whiteboard where people can plug in their laptops and work on a project. So the concept of work and place have separated and changed. To the last point on that slide, there's an overarching, from, say, 1975 to 2025, an overarching flow from physical to non-physical. And if you can hold that concept and look through that filter, a lot of what you see and will see makes sense. One of the first things that lost its physicality in the 70s was money, because electronic transfer changed that, or the use of credit cards. We don't need to carry physical money. Or 10 years ago, if you bought a book, it had to be physical. Music had to be physical. Magazines had to be physical. Now it doesn't. So all those companies that are in ascendancy, or a lot of them, not all of them, a lot of them, such as Google and Apple, have their ascendance because they are dealing with non-physical reality. Nicholas Negroponte famously said the industrial age economics is based on atoms, and the information age economics is based on digits. So keep that as a high level. Now, Dana, before I get into the next slide, which is let me get to the next slide first. I'm sorry.
Okay.
The leadership and management and transformation decade. So what this is what CEOs have asked me to give to them when I've led their corporate retreats, which is, what are the qualities that are essential for management and particularly leadership in the transformation decade? And the first one is adaptability. You have to be adaptable. If you're not adaptable, you're going to fall behind. I'm going to give an example. Some of you may know the organization called Vistage. It's the largest CEO organization in the world. I'm fortunate enough to be a speaker of the year for Vistage, so I speak to a lot of CEOs. And I'm going to give you an example of non-adaptability. It was February 2009, Fort Lauderdale, South Florida, one of the epicenters of the residential real estate meltdown in this country. And I went around the room and I asked each CEO what business they were in. And one of the first CEOs said he was in the construction business. And they said, how you doing? He said, well, I'm in the residential real estate construction business. So I'm going to go out of business and won't be able to stay in the group after the co-bankruptcy because nobody wants housing. Gee, I'm sorry to hear that. Some other CEO was in that group was also in the construction business. And so because of the first conversation, I said, so how's it going with you? And he said, actually, it's going okay. I used to be in the residential real estate construction business. But as a construction company, I couldn't make a profit in that business any longer. So now I'm in infrastructure, and I'm doing fine. So the first guy let himself be defined by the market he had always served, and the market had shifted away from him. The second guy was in the construction business, saw that the existing market he had served so well was shifting away from him, and adapted and found another market. That's just a simple, clear, exact example of adaptability. So if you hear, well, gee, we've never done it that way, or we've always done it this way, or this is our client base, or we don't introduce new products like that, you're not being adaptable. So you have to be adaptable. The second point on the slide is you got to develop the quality of resilience. You have to be resilient. Now, many of us on this call have had the reactive part of that by cutting costs, king, navigating through this downturn, everything else. But the more dynamic part is how to create a resilient company. One of the things you do not want to do is build structures. This futurist says that building structures is antithetical to resilience because structures become solidified, they become calcified, they become bureaucracies, they become resistant to change. That's one of the problems that major central governments in the developed countries of the world are having, is their industrial age bureaucracies resistant to change. So you got to develop the quality of resilience. Think of it this way. If I had a cannon or a bazooka, say, and I shot it into a wall, I'd either knock that wall down or blow a hole in it because it's a structure. If I shot that same bazooka shell into a net, like the type of net that captures the planes on a aircraft carrier, the net would collapse around the physics of the incoming plane and then retake its shape. So think about the concept of management structure more as a net than as a hierarchy. To the next point, collaborative ongoing reorganization. Now, there's two points there, collaborative and ongoing reorganization. 30 years ago, when I was running sales organizations and large companies, there wasn't anything called collaboration. The CEO would manage by walking around, give people suggestions, and say, I'll think about this and let you know what we're going to do. Now it's collaborative. And it's ongoing. So, for example, if you're thinking about the need to increase innovation in your company, don't get a committee together and say, we need the COO, we need to get together, we need the whiteboard. How do we increase innovation? Forget about that. Close your eyes and think about the employee or the employees in your company that just show up with the greatest quotient of innovation. Maybe it's the mailroom guy who does the mail differently or something like that. That's the first person to put on the committee to increase innovation. Look for the qualities that you want to increase or enhance and find the employees that represent that and make them part of the team. Don't look at titles. And the ongoing reorganization part comes in because, again, if everything in the world is changing its nature, shape, character, and form, and you're not, you're going to fall behind. So here we are in January. If by the end of June you haven't done something to reorganize some aspect of your company, social media strategy, marketing strategy, different kinds of videos on your website, new product launch, different reporting schemes, increasing the distributed workplace so people can work from home, stuff like that, you're going to fall behind. So the next slide, and again, I'm moving quickly here. These are heavy concepts. The change in trust and authority. When I was coming up in the corporate world in the 70s and the 80s, trust and authority were institutional. Baby boomers brushed their teeth with Crest toothpaste. Why? Because the American Dental Association told us to. Or my mother bought stuff with a good housekeeping seal of approval because it's institutionally approved, or Consumer Reports. Now it's personal. I'm not going to go to your restaurant, Mr. Restaurateur, because of what you say to me. I'm going to ask my friends what they think. That's the whole point of social media. Is authority has gone personal. I'm going to ask my friends before I ask an institution. I'm partnered with a market research firm that for 40 years has polled consumers, and they did a study 2 years ago that showed a 1.5 1-to-1 ratio of believability in consumer-generated content over institutional-generated content. So, for example, those of you that have websites and you have videos on it, don't make that video be you talking to your prospective customer. Make it be a customer talking about... Make it an existing customer talking about why they're your customer. And the story's gone flat. Again, the person in the loading dock may be the person to ask if you need to change the metrics of the loading dock, not the plant manager. So what does all of this mean? The last point on the slide, if you can put it up, please, Dana, is the morph corp. That's the metaphor for how you want to run a corporation for these next 10 years. The definition of morphing is an active definition of transformation, the act of changing one's nature, shape, character, or form. Google is a morph corp, right? 10 years ago, most of us discovered Google by, you know, what's that funny sounding search engine everybody's talking about? How do you spell? What does Google mean? Oh, it's pretty good. Now there's Google Maps, Google Earth, Google Broadband, Google Publishing, Google Energy. Wherever there's innovation, there's Google. Wall Street Journal wrote a column a couple years ago when Google announced they're going into energy because, of course, they have all these server farms that consume a lot of energy. And, you know, the Wall Street Journal opined, well, you know, I think that's wrong. Google's stepping outside their core competency of search. I'm sorry. The core competency of Google is innovation. Another morph corp, obviously, is Apple. Apple Computer Inc., 10 years ago, was a computer company that had 2.5% market share in the personal computer space. Now it's Apple Inc. It's the number one consumer electronics company in the world, and it's got a 9% share, at least in the United States, of the personal computer industry. So morph corp. So you've got to be a morph corp. And you all can think of companies that are not morph corps. I don't want to denigrate anybody. So at this point in time, Dana, I've covered a whole lot of high-level stuff. The next slide starts to take me into my forecast. So if you want to take a break and field a couple of questions, I'd be glad to do so.
I think we're good. Well, if anyone has questions, you can put them onto the chat area on the site, and we'll try to respond to as many as possible. Or if you want to hold your questions, we're going to open up the line at the end of the program. We can all talk directly to David.
Okay,
David,
great.
Well, keep going.
Okay, great. So the next slide, economic forecast for 2011. And I'm going to go through these real quickly. Dana mentioned the shift age trend report. I put it out at the end of January and the end of July every year. It's a large, you know, 40-50 megabyte download. And that's why I put all my forecasts. So these are the forecasts that I've just been working on that are going to the current, soon-to-be-published trend report. The first one, in the United States, and I must say this is oriented towards the United States. I apologize for those outside the country. I know the economics of the United States a little bit better, so my specific forecast is with the United States. First of all, the GDP growth would be about 3% for 2011. Just keep putting the slide, just put all the points up there, Dana, I'll just go through them. There's going to be no real inflation. I've been saying for 3 years there's no going to be inflation. In 2008, I said there'd be a risk of deflation. Nobody believed me, and it proved to be right. The inflation may start kicking up in the fourth quarter of 2011. Unfortunately, unemployment is going to stay over 9% until late 2011, and maybe beyond that. We're in a historic change in the definition of employment in the developed countries of the world. From the agricultural age to the institution, to the industrial age, we move from being individual farmers and artisans to being massed up to big business, big government, big unions. And now, coming out of the information age and the shift age, we're going back to being artisans or independent contractors. And that's one of the reasons unemployment is high, because we're measuring it from an outdated institutional viewpoint. State cities are clearly going to face bankruptcy. I've been forecasting this for 2 years. We all know what's going on with the federal government. But with the decline in real estate values and in the recession, the revenues are down. So there's going to be, unfortunately, bankruptcies in states and cities. We already see disruption in the municipal bond market as a result of this. I've been fairly accurate with oil. 2006, I said in 2008, we crossed $125 a barrel of oil. Of course, at the time, it was 50, and I was absolutely ridiculed. And, of course, it went to 147. So it's one of the few energy sectors where I seem to have some consistent accuracy. So oil is going to go over $100 a barrel this year and will largely trade the entire year between 90 and 120. So high-priced gasoline here to stay for the year. Lastly, debt is a four-letter word. Savings are going to stay high. With the exception of November and December of last year, prior to that, there were 19 consecutive months, unprecedented in American history, of aggregate pay down of outstanding consumer debt. Debt is a four-letter word. We've all been burned by it. Savings rates are creeping up back to the historical levels they were in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. So that's the economic forecast. Now to the next slide, the technology forecast. The first point, it's the tipping point for e-books. We ended last year at 10%. By the end of this first quarter or the first half of the year, 2011, we're going to be at 15%. And by 2020, we're going to 20% of all books will be e-books. And that's the explosion of the e-readers that we all know about in the tablets. So the next point, and this is very interesting, and I don't have enough time to delve into it, brainwave interface technology is coming to the market. For a few $100 over the next 18 months, there's going to be several companies that are going to introduce brainwave technology. Now, this comes from research done with quadriplegics, so the quadriplegics can control their wheelchairs by thought. So the model, think of a headset you put on, it's got 16 sensors that map your brainwaves. And then once they've been mapped around a concept like lift a heavy object, you go to the computer and you think lift a heavy object and that boulder or whatever on the screen will lift. So this is truly coming. It's going to be cheap and it's going to transform everything. As Dana said, I just wrote a book on transforming K-12 education. How are you going to teach a 14-year-old middle schooler in the classroom in 2016 when she's spending 2 hours a day doing brainwave interface? Just think about that. Next point, pay TV subscriptions are going to continue their inexorable decline. For 3 years I've been forecasting this, and over the last 3 quarters I've finally been proven correct, because we're all being oriented towards wanting to watch what we want to watch, when we watch it, where we watch it, how we watch it, what screens we watch it, and the pay TV business is all about paying for things you don't watch, and you have to be at home to not watch them. So that's going to... And again, that goes to the power of the people, technology, flat-screen TVs that you can buy now that direct to the Internet, so you can search the whole Internet. You can do video conferencing with Skype. You can do Facebook. You can do YouTube, all of that. So the next one, the third stage of mapping begins. What I mean by this is the first stage of mapping was mapping the land masses of the world as to what they were shaped like. The second stage of mapping was to mapping how we traverse these land masses, road maps. Now we're into the third stage of mapping, which is the mapping of human movement, because we're all carrying around GPS devices. So we're able, Foursquare being an example, we're able to map where we are in relative to other people we know and other people we might like to know. Finally, on that slide, mobile unique promotions and advertising finally takes off. It's been the next big thing for 4 years, and this is the year it's going to absolutely explode. Everything's moving to mobile. Most of the people who are listening to my voice now reference their smartphones or their app phones constantly through the day. Some don't even travel with computers anymore. So mobile advertising is really going to take off, and it's actually going to be one of the most effective forms of advertising in history, because you'll be reaching advertising to the consumer where they are relative to one of your stores that's right nearby or something that they can take advantage of that they're right near. Now, to the last slide, culture and society, 2010 to 2012. The first point is a long one, but the thrift is the new cool, and the too much stuff recession that the global recession triggered is now moving into a new trend or a movement. And I haven't come up with the catchphrase yet, but I call it for the moment the less is more movement, with a developing sense of separating the word need from the word want. This is a major new force with wide and deep ramifications in all the developing countries of the world. In other words, 5 years ago, people would go into a mall and go, oh, I want that, and they'd buy. Now they're going to go, well, I might want that, but do I really need that? And you see all these micro trends about how to live with, you know, 12 pieces of clothing, or how to have less than 100 items in your apartment. People are downsizing and loving it. And of course, with this physical to non-physical, I can carry 2,500 books in my pocket or my briefcase. I can carry 1,000 albums in my pocket, and I can carry all my movies on a small hard drive. So less is more is coming. The next point, and I've been forecasting this since I started the Trend Report in 2009, no question, in the United States, and I think in a lot of the developing countries of the world, marijuana continues to move from decriminalization to legalization. After the 2012 election, I think marijuana is largely going to become legal, and the reason it is money. It's always money, right? When I was a young boy, you said gambling in the United States was either the Mafia or Vegas. Now it's hard to find a state where you can't gamble, and certainly you can buy state lottery tickets. So it's just another sin to tax, and in these trying times, politicians are going to not be able to avoid that. Finally, the last point on that slide is real estate gets rethought, redefined, and reused. Certainly in the United States, I think in Canada as well, and then in Europe, there's enough real estate. We don't need to build another square foot of commercial, residential, or retail real estate. But what we need to do is reconfigure them. So the people who are going to make a lot of money in real estate over the next couple of years are the people that take these McMansions that are sitting vacant and convert them into a 6,000-square-foot house instead of for one nuclear family, three retired boomer couples who can share costs and create a whole community. Or you take all these vacant strip centers I see wherever I go in the United States and make them healthcare centers or schools, et cetera. I could go on at length. So that's really a quick hit of a few forecasts. And on that last slide, it's just a big thank you and questions, and I'm open to any questions in the time we have, Dana. I'm sorry I've taken a little bit longer.
No, this is hard to navigate. Absolutely phenomenal. Typical of our open line, what we're going to do is I'm going to just share a little bit of information. We're going to close this section down. I'm going to turn the recording equipment off because we've had comments in the past that people just didn't like their voice being recorded or whatever, the questions they asked. So I'm going to conclude here, and then we'll open up the line, and you guys can talk to David directly. Before we close this part down, David, could you just mention briefly about the shift age report, and I wanted to mention again, as I did in the beginning, that if you'd like to sign up for the trend report, next to David's picture, lower left-hand corner of the slide, you'll see the shift age next to author, and there's a promo code. So when you go to the shift age, you put the promo code in, you'll get $100 off. Well, again, it's very gracious of David to do this for everybody today. I really appreciate that. So, David, why don't you share quickly a little bit about that?
Well, if you see that URL right at the bottom one, right next to my name, www.davidhull.com, if you go to that, on every page of that website, in the upper right-hand corner is an icon for the Shift Store. If you click on that, you'll get a page that's got three icons. The top icon is the Shift Age newsletter. And that is free, and I urge you all, at the very least, to sign up for that. I put it out 7 to 8 times a year, and it's just a newsletter that has some high-level thinking, some trends, some analysis, and usually a couple of videos and book recommendations. The second icon, which is what Dana was referring to, is the Shift Trend Report, which is a semi-annual, 40 to 50 megabyte download, completely interactive, media-rich, edited videos. And I usually do, in between those two, video updates for subscribers. Normally $275. Dana arm wrestled me down to $175, and I'm happy if anybody subscribes to that. And then, of course, if you're on that site, you'll see that I have a blog, www.evolutionshift.com, that you can sign up for email notifications. So that's the brief
advertisement. Great, I appreciate that. You'll see on your screen the area to register for the upcoming February 18th program, Open Line, which is entitled Tips for Staying Ahead of the Recovery. Please sign up today. Reserve your space for yourself and let others know if you'd like them to join in. In the next few days, you'll receive a recording and PowerPoint for today's program. Please feel free to share it with others in your organization or within your association. Again, I'm going to open up the line in just a second here after we close this down. David and I want to thank you for your time today and for all the valuable ideas that have been shared. If you'd like to contact David to have further discussion on the specifics about your industry, the future of it, your team, or to have some one-to-one time or discuss ideas shared in today's program, or for having David talk to your association
please give them a call. The information shared today is a property of Lighthouse Consulting Services, LLC, located in Santa Monica, California. Our mission statement is to bring effective insight to your organization. If you'd like to contact me for more information, please write me at dana@lighthouseconsulting.com. If you have other topics you'd like us to address, please let us know. Thank you so much for joining us, and we look forward to having you join us for our next Keeping on Track Open Line program. Have a great day. Now, please hold the line, and let me turn the recording off, and then we'll open it up.